Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Nicholas Harum, and you're listening to the Bad Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We are going to be talking today about Iron Man 3. I'm sure you may have heard this movie. It's a little independent film that they made. Little comic book movie. There have been a couple of them made. There was a movie last year that had this Iron Man guy in it. Avenging Angel, I think was what it was last year that came out. We're also going to talk about DVDs and Blu-rays. There's really nothing else that's coming out of any note, which is odd because usually they do some sort of counter-programming.
Yeah, I guess they sort of figure this one is just going to destroy the box office, so they might as well just not even throw up anything against it.
Get out of its way. Because in the first Iron Man that came out in 2008, that one went up against, I think, Maid of Honor. And actually, Maid of Honor did very well, unfortunately, because it was a terrible movie. But that was the one with Dr. McDreamy from Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, playing. No, what was it, Michelle Monaghan?
Michelle Monaghan was in it. So then last year, I can't remember, I think Best Exotic Marigold Hotel opened against Avengers. But that made $200 million this opening weekend, so I think everyone's just getting out of the way for Iron Man 3. But before we talk about that and all things Iron Man, because it's going to be a very Iron Man-saturated talk this week, well, let's talk a little bit about box office and were we correct. You'll notice that this is not Kristen Dreyer Kramer in this magical studio in the sky with me.
Nope. She's doing something, isn't she?
She's vacationing. She's on a well-needed vacation where I don't think she's going to get any rest at all.
No, she might get malaria, I guess, but no.
That's possible. She may come home a little sick, but she'll be less sick than staying with her daughter, who's just a little germ infection. She's adorable. She's one of the most adorable germ infection.
Sort of like the monkey from Outbreak.
Yeah, well, that monkey was angry, though. you saw the poster.
I think it was just the fact that it was in the cage.
Yeah. It like bananas.
And if you put her baby in a cage, it might be the same thing.
I've seen her baby in a cage. It's basically what a playpen is. She is not happy with being in a cage. She's moving around. She wants to be free to go what she wants to do. But Kristen and I did talk about the box office last weekend, and our predictions were, I said $35 million for Pain and Gain. I was wrong. And she said $28 million, and she was also wrong. Yet I am going to declare victory. Because that's how I roll. And she's not here to defend herself, so I don't even have to justify it.
Even though you were $7 million over what she predicted, you're still claiming victory.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she almost nailed it with Oblivion, and I still declare victory. I declare victory. That's how I roll. I just declare victory. I am like a dictator leading up to a massive world war. I just come in and declare victory. Whether I have a right to the land or not, I just declare victory.
Or if someone just comes in and steals it from you after the fact when you've moved on to your next quote-unquote conquest.
Well, yeah. But, okay. I mean, every week it's a conquest for the box office title. Anyways, Pain and Gain did win with $20 million, which was actually kind of low. I mean, it's not terribly low. It was about to expectations.
It's R-rated, so you know, $20 million is still not unspectacular for an R-rated movie. But
they were predicting a little bit more. They're like predicting low 20s, and this was as low of a 20 as you can get. I think, and I think there was a bit of a deflation you felt from the studios because they're like, oh, this wasn't a massive hit. I mean, it didn't have giant robots in it. You know, it didn't have giant freeway chases with explosions. There are a couple explosions in it, but I think it's – what it did is I think it tested whether or not Michael Bay could be successful outside of the big action movie franchise that he's known for. And yes, he is, but the only reason this is going to be successful is because it cost $25 million to make.
Yeah, so it's automatically almost made its budget back. By this point, it probably has probably about $5 to $7 million by this point in a week.
Yeah, but it's not going to be this massive, unbridled hit. I'll be curious to see what happens overseas.
And I think he signed up for two movies with Paramount to do. You know, like after Transformers 4, he's going to do another small picture for him. So it'll be sort of interesting how this one affects that next small picture after Transformers.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens there because I think on a certain level he was forced to actually tell a story because he couldn't get distracted, but it did run too long, and I heard a lot of people saying that I think he needs more restraint in there, but he's an idiot. And he does not understand character, and it's like the best he could do. This was the best he could do, character-wise.
Yeah, it's it runs like 210,
yeah.
I think, and it probably would have... I liked the movie, but an hour 45, I think I would have liked it slightly more.
Easy.
Or tolerated more, because I was ready to... I was sort of sneaking peeks at my phone to like see like how much longer I was going to be, you know, enduring this.
It's his shortest movie since Bad Boys 1.
Yeah, so 18 years, he's finally gotten under 220.
And I think the only reason it was that short is because he couldn't have a giant 30-minute sequence of giant robots blowing people up.
Yeah.
So, came in second was Oblivion. Almost, actually blew my mind that Oblivion came close to matching or close to beating Pain and Gain. And in fact, if you factor in how kind of front-loaded Pain and Gain was, it could have actually, if you took out some of the excitement on Friday, you know, over the weekend, Oblivion did better. It ended up with $18 million.
And I'm sort of surprised by that. Like, the reviews have not been awful. It hasn't been great for Oblivion. It's sort of been middling. And I'm sort of surprised it had, you know, it's not great legs, but, you know, to almost beat the number one movie is still pretty respectable.
True. I think its legs are going to get chopped off by Iron Man this weekend, obviously.
No. I think it's posed to retake the box office
with
this
$200
week.
Million.
Exactly. Tom Cruise and... He's going to take it back.
That's right. With his amazing
body. I mean, what?
Also on the list, or going down the list, we've got 42 at $11 million. The Big Wedding at $7.6 million. That was a terrible movie. I actually went and saw it last week. It was trying to be raunchy. They always have these raunchy, like, wedding movies, like Wedding Crashers, but this one they had old people, and it's like people didn't...
That was the Robert De Niro one.
Robert De Niro, Diane Keaton, a whole lot of people were in this
Does
movie.
Robert De Niro cry in this one?
I don't know.
Because that's like the hallmark of an awful, awful film, is anytime Robert De Niro cries, unless he's just hearing about Joe Pesci being murdered.
Well, that's true. That could work.
I can accept him crying for that, but... Go watch Showtime, folks, and watch De Niro cry. It's awful.
Nice. There's then The Croods, G.I. Joe, and then it was going down the list. Iron Man actually made $198 million overseas last weekend, which is the opening of the weekend was bigger than the Avengers last year overseas. So we'll talk a little bit about that more in the box office segment. Again, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum. And if you want to email us, you can reach us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We have one of those to listen to, and we'll respond to it later in the show. You can reach us at fatguysatthemovies.com, and you can reach the show on facebook.com/FGATM. Again, if you want to call us, you can call us at 740-205-6456. If you want to reach me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Kevin Carr. Nicholas, tell us real quickly about who you are. Remind the audience, you've been on the show before, and we've heard you on the radio, but remind us, it's been a while.
Yeah, I write for movieshateyou2.com, and I can be found at Twitter at movieshate, the letter U, 2, T-O-O. And on Facebook at facebook.com/movieshateyou2.
All right. Sounds good. We are going to talk. Actually, we might move this into the... We'll start talking about this. One thing I want to talk about in terms of movie news is there was at CinemaCon not too long ago, and I know you're a huge fan of R-rated movies, Nicholas. Exhibitors have asked for more PG-13 and less R-rated films. This is not a new request. They do this all the time. This is constantly thrown out there. They said, we need to make more PG-13 movies. Real quickly, 30 seconds, what's your real quick first blanch take on this?
I think it's just a greed issue, you know, because they know R-rated movies are just not going to... They just cut out so much of the audience from what they can, you know, what they can go see. It's just, you know, let's make more money, let's be less artistic, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I think that we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from the break, but we got to go to one now, and when we come back, like I said, we're going to talk more about R-rated movies and talk about Iron Man 3. We're back with Bad Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum, sitting in for Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We were talking a little bit about the CinemaCon story where the exhibitors have asked for more PG-13 and less R-rated films. Of course, like you said, it's a money grab. The PG-13 rating allows pretty much everyone to see it. You can see it. I mean, technically, there's that 13, but they don't. That's not anything that's enforced.
Yeah, it's not an enforceable rule. Yeah. You know, it's a suggested rating, and you know, to advise parents that probably don't care anyways to not let their kids go see it.
I mean, 10-year-olds can go in and buy a ticket to PG-13. They don't care. They let them in. Anybody can see it. What one of my takes on this is, I've always found this very short-sighted because they always, they being the exhibitors and the studios, and it's because of the money. They want more money. They want a bigger audience. And they sort of downplay R-rated movies. And some of it right now, I think it stems from the fact that there was always at the beginning of the year, you get more R-rated movies. You tend to get, than you do in the summer. You get a little more at the end of the year sometimes, but right at the beginning of the year, you get like horror movies and action films. They've had a bunch this year, and a bunch of them have not done well. And the sort of the action genre. You had The Last Stand with Arnold Schwarzenegger. That didn't do well.
Yeah, and Bullet to the Head did not do well.
Didn't do well. Good Day to Die Hard did okay, but it was not a big movie. It's the lowest grossing U.S. grossing Die Hard movie ever. The highest grossing U.S. is Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, which was PG-13. And I was having a discussion on Facebook today with somebody who, because they greenlit Die Hard 6. And I basically said it's going to be PG-13. He's like, why? The last one's doing well. And I'm like, it's only doing well overseas. But the American R rating, studios, the takeaway is studios are going to say that hurt the performance. And it's stupid because you have movies like Identity Thief, which is one of the biggest hits of the year so far. Same thing, Olympus Has Fallen, you mentioned in the break to me.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's at $93 million on a movie that essentially cost probably, what, $20-25 million? You know, it was doesn't have like a major amount of star power. You know, the effects were sometimes not all that great. So it's not like a bunch of money went into that. You know, it's a...
Well, and you've got other things to consider, whereas the first couple weeks of the year were ruled by R-rated movies. You had... Well, Mama was PG-13, but you had Zero Dark Thirty winning box office. This is a spillover from last year. You had the Texas Chainsaw Movie winning the box office. You had there was a whole slew of R-rated movies that came and you had stuff like Bullet to the Head and Last Stand that didn't do well.
And those are probably going to still make money on DVD and Blu-ray down the line, and studios know that.
Yep.
Going in, and it's sometimes a double-edged sword. Think if you made, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre PG-13. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, you might get some tween money going into the box office for that, but what are your horror enthusiasts, the ones that have made that franchise possible for so many generations, are they going to go see a PG-13?
Yeah.
You know, another Chainsaw.
Or the comedies. That's what those comedies and horror, a kind of mix of that is A Haunted House. Even that's a terrible movie. It did very well. Way better than Scary Movie 5, which was a PG-13 movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was. I think all the scary movies since the third one have all been PG-13. And, you know, they make a quick buck.
Yeah.
But they don't think they've had the box office stamina or the DVD sales that, you know, the first two R-rated scary movies had.
Yeah. And I think that this is something that we see all the time, and it's nothing new. This is the same argument. I remember going to church when I was younger, and every now and then you see somebody, they have these things where you have to share joys and concern. I always kind of like poo-poo that stuff because I think it's silly to say, oh, my, you know, there's always like people who have like a legitimate problem. They're like, oh, my mother's in the hospital or something like that. Can you please pray for her? And then somebody goes, I just want to say how nice it is to see people here. And you're just like, well, that's not a joy. You just want to say something. You want to stand in front of an audience. And so I remember somebody standing up going, I was reading an article that they're making fewer R-rated movies. And I think that's a good thing. And I'm like, no, it's not a good thing. What's wrong with R-rated movies? It's a grown-up type thing to do. Your kids shouldn't necessarily be watching them unless they're the parents deem it okay. So they're not for kids, they're for adults. So why are you complaining about R-rated movies when you're 86 years old?
Yeah, if you don't want to go watch it, no one's forcing you to go watch it.
Sit down, old man.
And certain people like know, movies that are made and aimed at adults.
Yep.
And I happen to be one of them.
You are. you have a general hatred for PG-13, I would say.
I think it's neutered the film industry to a certain extent where they, you know, want to just cut just about anything that could be R, just snip bits and pieces to make it a movie that's accessible to everybody, thus alienating a certain portion of the population of it.
In general, I like movies that are made and they're made with the audience in mind and then they're made. There are people that hate, like, I remember when True Grit came out, somebody said to me, they're like, it's rated PG. It shouldn't be rated PG. I go, well, first of all, the original was rated G. And I think the Coen brothers aren't worried about a rating. They just made a movie and it just got a PG rating. And I can appreciate that.
So. Yeah. Well, it's also, you know, I like PG movies actually. I like PG and R because I know what the PG movie they are going for. They are, you know, it's going for that family audience.
Well, but I don't think
the
PG-13 is necessarily. I think we're going to be talking about Iron Man here, Iron Man 3. They know they have to have a PG-13 rating. If they come up with a PG rating, great. But they got to have at least a PG-13 rating. I don't think they're making. If they are making decisions of let's not make this as hard for a big budget superhero movie, I think that makes sense because it'd be neat to see an R-rated Iron Man, but I think it would be a bad idea.
Oh yeah, and take out like something that's specifically made to be PG-13 that has really no need to be R. I'm not arguing against those PG-13 movies. I don't like the R-rated movie that was, you know, should probably be R, was maybe originally thought was going to be R, and then the studio comes in and says, let's cut, and get this down to a PG-13 so we can get, so we can just get that in for the teens.
I think most movies in general are made with a rating in mind, and it's appropriate for their audience. And sometimes they don't, and then sometimes that happens. Sometimes the studio swoops in and changes it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but I do think that it happens with a rating in mind. Like I said, the Iron, you know, superhero movies, they're like. You know, I mean, unless you're talking about something like Kick-Ass, which is coming out, Kick-Ass 2, these movies are made, they make the movie to make the movie, and then they submit it for the rating, and they usually get the rating they want. It's actually pretty rare that they have to go petition for a different rating or make cuts.
Unless you're talking about something that gets like an NC-17.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're like, oh, let's try and get that down to an R.
Yeah, yeah.
Which usually it's some silly.
But even then, it's rare. It's
silly moments.
You hear a movie getting an NC-17 rating once every, you know, once a year, maybe.
Yeah, once or twice, yeah. It seems like. And it usually seems pretty silly, and half the time, you know, Fight Club got an NC-17 for one particular line, and they switched it, made it so much worse.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, we got to go to a break. I'm going to leave us out on the trailer for Iron Man 3. We end up talking about PG-13 and R ratings and what they mean. But we're going to talk about Iron Man 3 when we come back. And here's the blurb. We're going to play the trailer. Shane Black directs this third film in which Tony Stark must deal with a greater threat from the evil Mandarin.
Nothing's been the same since New York. I can't sleep. And when I do, I have nightmares. Honestly, there's 100 people who want to kill me. I hope I can protect the one thing I can't live without.
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher. Lesson number one. Heroes. There is no such thing.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum, sitting in for Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We just left you on the Iron Man preview. Iron Man 3. Excuse me, Iron Man 3. There were two other movies that we apparently missed. That is the latest Marvel film. It's the first post-Avengers film. What were your thoughts on it?
I liked it. I think it played better than Iron Man 2. I'm not really sure I liked it more than the original Iron Man, but if you were not terribly impressed with Iron Man 2, I think this is a better film.
Yeah, you can tell it's directed by a different guy.
No, definitely.
And you can definitely see Shane Black's fingerprints all over it. If you're familiar with Shane Black's work and the stuff he's written, because he wrote, didn't he write Lethal Weapon?
Oh, yeah, he wrote Lethal Weapon, The Last Boy Scout.
And he also directed stuff like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And so you see that sort of that dark, edgier, very almost sarcastic tone. And Jon Favreau, who did, of course, directed the first two movies, he's got a lighter touch. So does Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon has a lighter touch. Joss Whedon can go very dark, but he has a much lighter touch to his characters. There's a little more edge that Shane Black puts on this.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a Shane Black film.
Yeah.
You know, if you like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is sort of a film noir, you know, detective movie.
Starring Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, with Robert Downey Jr. and, you know, Val Kilmer sort of looking like a character from Iron Man 3 in a way.
Possibly.
you definitely see the influence there.
Yeah. One of the things, this is also a longer movie. They tend to make these big summer blockbusters can tend to be a little more than 2 hours. You know, we had Pain and Gain recently over 2 hours. You had Oblivion over 2 hours. They both felt long. This one, it didn't feel long to me. It didn't feel like this shouldn't have been 2 hours and 10 or 15 minutes, whatever it was.
I felt a little bit long, but, you know, we saw the movie together tonight.
Mm.
We saw it in the theater version of the Hot Box.
Yeah.
So I was just itching to get out of there, mostly because of the uncomfortable conditions we were in.
It was like 85 degrees in the theater.
We were both drenched
yeah.
in sweat, but... You know, yeah, it definitely didn't feel like Pain and Gain long, and they have them at the exact same runtime.
Yeah.
So this one definitely flowed better.
And it has some, what you expect from the Iron Man movies, you expect some great action set pieces. It really obviously heavily relies on Robert Downey Jr. It takes him out of the suit for a good chunk of the movie, which is
really,
good.
Really long chunk of the movie.
Yeah. And that's part of the, I was thinking about this, you know, there's a lot of movies, I don't know if I'd say Iron Man 2 was a typical second movie sequel, because a lot of times you have that first movie and then the second movie is a big punch and really good. But a lot of times in those second movies, they have the hero get out of the superpowers for a while. They did that with Superman 2. They did that with Spider-Man 2. You see a lot, you get more in the humanity because they've told the origin story. They can get more in the humanity. Whereas Iron Man 2 was, I think, rushed. I liked Iron Man 2. I actually liked it better than the first one. But I know a lot of people complained because it was like this back-end pilot for S.H.I.E.L.D. and all this kind of stuff. But you really got more into the depth of the character of Tony Stark in this movie. So it feels more like a second film to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just sort of left with Iron Man 2. I was just like, eh. The S.H.I.E.L.D. thing didn't bother me too much. Mm. But with this one, I did enjoy the fact that there was, you know, you were just, when you watch an Iron Man movie, especially Iron Man, like compare it to Batman, yeah. you know Christian Bale's in the suit.
Yeah.
When you watch an Iron Man movie, it's just like, oh, well, Robert Downey Jr. is doing a voiceover.
Of course.
Most of the movie. That's why they take his old mask off so often so you can actually see his face. But a lot of times it's just a CGI
Sure. No, that's
Iron
how they,
Man.
Yeah.
So it's just like with this one, you were like, oh, well, Robert Downey Jr. is actually getting a chance to actually act for long portions of the movie, which I actually liked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not that he was in the suit 24/7 in the other two films. It takes him a while to even get in the suit in the first movie and in Iron Man 2. He spends a lot of time. You spend a lot of time with Tony Stark. This one just feels more of it's more about his character from beginning to end. And I think it works. I think it's a good villain. One of the things I like about it is it's not. I saw somebody criticize or rather say what Marvel got right that DC gets wrong is these standalone hero movies cannot be about somebody destroying the world. You cannot have a planetary threat in Iron Man, Iron Man 2, or Iron Man 3 when you've got an Avengers coming up. The Avengers, you assemble all these heroes to stop the planetary threat, as they had in the Avengers last year, but there needs to be a smaller scale villain. He can still be disastrous and mean and terrible, and a lot of people could die from it, or power and greed and hunger, all that kind of stuff. But you don't have a giant alien going to wipe out Earth, because where do you go for the movie? If Iron Man can stop somebody from wiping out the Earth, why does he need the rest of the Avengers?
it's a valid point.
Yeah.
Something they run into with like DC's Green Lantern.
Yeah. That was one of the problems with Green Lantern. I mean, I know a lot of
one
people.
One of many
the
problems.
I have a soft spot for Green Lantern. But But you, but that was the thing. It's like, well, you know, here's a, it was a giant planetary threat. It was an Avenger level threat that was going to wipe out the Earth, and one guy can stop it
with his glow pop ring,
his ring pop. So I really enjoyed. I liked the action. I thought the pacing was really good. I liked the humor. It wasn't cheeky. It was it followed what Favreau set down and what Joss Whedon continued, because Avengers, even though it had all the heroes, it's very much an Iron Man movie as well. And I think that that sort of sarcastic humor kept in there without getting goofy. And that's so easy to fall into, especially with comic book movies.
Yeah, and this one, you know, once again, harking back to Shane Black, you know, I think this one has probably the best villain. You know, I love Jeff Bridges in the original Iron Man. Mm. I think the villain or villains, yeah, whatever you want to say, are just perfect in this.
Yeah.
Just laid out perfectly. Loved that whole aspect of the movie, probably more than any of the other Marvel movies so far of the Avengers, with maybe the exception being Thor. I enjoyed Tom Hiddleston quite a bit, but
well,
this one's laid out
goes
pretty
into
well.
The Avengers as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a nice carryover.
I think with Iron Man, I will say that I believe this is the best Iron Man movie, because, like I said, I like the first one. There's nothing wrong with the first one. I just wasn't a huge fan of the first one. And the second one I actually like better. I'm in the minority on that. But I like this one better than the other two. Part of it is I like movies where you can get into the characters and you don't need a giant origin story. And both Iron Man and Iron Man 2 served as origin stories in their own way. And this one didn't. This one you jump in and you're there and all the characters are lined up. You don't have to explain who they are. And boom, you can then tell a story. You can open up the comic book and read it. And it gets to an end, and it has an end, which I enjoy. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum, sitting in for Kristen Dreyer Kramer. What's your final grade on Iron Man 3?
A rocks.
Okay. I'm giving it a rocks, too. I think it definitely deserves that.
I think it also probably deserves probably a second viewing, just to sort of reaffirm a little bit, like, you know, when you're first watching it the first time, there's a lot to take in this.
Yeah.
And I definitely think it's probably worth a second viewing just to sort of re-verify.
What do you think of the 4K presentation? Because we saw it on a 4K screen, which is one of the newer ones in town.
Yeah, because I don't think, because we saw that in the same theater we saw The Gray in last year, and I don't think that was...
It wasn't at that point, no.
It wasn't a 4K. It was a great presentation. Thought the 3D looked good. Unfortunately, it's just like they spent all that money on a projector, and then we still had to sit in a hot box.
All right, we've got a little bit more than a minute. What do you think? Do you want me to throw out my number for what I think Iron Man's going to do? Or
go for it, because I'm not very good at predicting these type of things.
I'm going to say $115 million for this weekend.
I'm going to go higher than that.
Okay.
I'll go $135.
Okay, $135. Let's write that down. $135 for Nick. $135 for Nick.
And depending on how next week goes, Kristen might have to defend that.
Maybe. That's possible. If she doesn't have Da Nang fever or something like that when she gets back. She wasn't bitten by a tsetse fly or something like that while she's at Machu Picchu.
Yep.
So she told me she had to buy like bug-resistant clothes. Which I'm like, first of all, you're getting all these injections and you're buying bug-resistant clothes. Maybe you shouldn't go. I mean, I'm all for
broadening. I don't know what bug-resistant clothes, like...
They have insecticide on them, which is great, because you're going
to
sleep in them.
Well, I've been to Africa. You know, I didn't have to buy bug-resistant clothing. Whatever, I guess. I guess I'm lucky to be alive. I somehow made it through.
Exactly. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be we're going to take a listener voicemail, and then we're going to also talk about DVDs. Back to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum, sitting in for Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We were talking about Iron Man 3 and sort of our thoughts on that and how much it's going to make. Some people are like, I know there's people going, oh, is it going to make $200 million? Because it's not going to make $200 million. I mean, it'll make $200 million over its run.
Yeah, just not opening weekend, especially since it doesn't have a 3-day weekend. Not that Avengers did, But I feel like the build up for Avengers was somewhat bigger than the build up for Iron Man 3.
Yeah. Well, and also this first weekend of May tends to be the opening weekend of the summer, tends to do really, really well. So yeah, I mean it's going to do well. It's going to do north of 100 million and there's nothing in its way. So yeah, it'll be there.
And next week there's not really, there's a movie coming out next week.
There's two.
But I don't think it's anything that's going to probably steal most of that audience.
No, it's a Great Gatsby, and I think that's going to have a certain limited market, but Iron Man 3 will probably win both this weekend and next weekend. And then Star Trek comes out.
Hmm.
Stand back, people. We have a voicemail we're going to play, and this is from our good friend Thomas from Seattle. And he has actually very sort of related to Iron Man, so let's give it a listen.
Hi, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle with another question. I was listening to somebody talking about Avengers 2, and they were talking about how the first Avengers was such a success because Joss Whedon was such a fan. And, that implies that other movies, like maybe G.I. Joe, the first one, didn't succeed because Stephen Sommers wasn't a fan. And I'm like, what does being a fan have to do with anything? Like, I'm a big fan of Batman, but that doesn't mean I'm going to make a good Batman movie. And somebody who's not a big fan of Batman, but is a good director, could make a good Batman movie, better than the one I would make. So I always feel like directors are giving a lot of credit for the movie being good because they're a fan of the property. And I would assume that a lot of people love the movie. They love what they're making, but they just aren't very good at it. So it's like, well, I would think talent outweighs how much somebody likes the property that they're trying to make into a movie.
Here's my take on this whole thing about fan versus, whether you need to be a fan or whether you don't need to be a fan. I'm actually going to remove myself from that question initially, what your actual greater question is. And I'm going to zero in on Joss Whedon here. And I've been on record as not being a huge fan of Joss Whedon. I've never been a fan of Buffy. I've never been a fan I did not like Firefly. So there's a lot of stuff I don't like that Joss Whedon's done. I loved The Avengers, however. I thought The Avengers was a fantastic film. I think that and good for Joss Whedon. He did a fantastic job with this movie, and he and Drew Goddard did a great job with Cabin in the Woods last year, so good for them. I'm glad they made an awesome movie. They've made a couple great films in 2012. I think that Joss Whedon has been sort of the redheaded stepchild of Hollywood for so long, where he's got such a rabid fan base, and he's got a certain level of success, but he never made mainstream success. And so I think his fans are just freaking happy he made mainstream success, and they want to attribute anything to that reason. I really think that's what it is. I don't think you need to be a fan to do a good job, because Bryan Singer was not a fan. He didn't read the X-Men, yet he made two really good movies.
Yeah, and then he was a huge fan of Superman,
and that was
that was not a great success.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was also going to say, I don't know whether Richard Donner was a huge fan of Superman, and that first movie was really good. I don't know where Christopher Nolan stood on Batman, but I mean, I think it's more about being a good filmmaker before being a fan, because if you're a fan, sometimes you can't divorce yourself from the stuff that ties you too closely to the source material.
And sometimes I think it does help, though, to be a fan in some ways. Mm-hmm. My example is not so super superhero related, but I would use like Star Trek and Star Trek Nemesis as a good example. Mm-hmm. Stuart Baird, who is a great editor, edited like Lethal Weapon movies and stuff like that for Richard Donner, knew nothing about Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, Nicholas Meyer, same thing.
Yeah, but Nicholas Meyer like immersed himself in Star Trek before he directed Star Trek II. Stuart Baird didn't even know Data was like an android. Thought he was another alien, and had to have that explained to him on the set.
Oh, okay.
And so it's just like, well, that's sort of a mess. And even the cast has come out years later and said, yeah, he was not a great choice because of his not being familiar with the source material.
Well, there's a difference between not being familiar. If you just walk on the set and you don't know what the heck you're doing, that's a bad thing in any movie.
Oh, yeah, but at least, you could say that certain people that were, like, if you're a fan of Star Trek, you're going to get certain things right. And if you're, you know, hopefully a comic book fan or a fan of Batman or Iron Man or the Avengers, you're going to have a certain, you know, a certain familiarity to get things right. Hopefully.
I think a good director resists to a degree putting his or her own spin on it and wants to be true to the source material. And the people that want to reinvent it, those are where the people fall into traps. And I'll use Nicholas Meyer as a great example of that. He didn't, as we said, he wasn't a fan. He didn't watch Star Trek. And you say he immersed himself. I wouldn't say he immersed himself, but he learned about it. He didn't go in cold. He didn't sit there and say, okay, somebody write me a script and I'll walk on set and start directing.
Oh, no. Like, he just like, oh, well, there's, you know, go get me all the episodes of the original series. I want to watch them.
As you
and
should.
Then, yeah. And as then he's totally just like, should. Well, who's the best, you know, person I can bring in? But let's do Khan.
But a great example of how he, if he were a fan, he would have never let this happen. In Star Trek II, when is it the Reliant? When the Reliant shows up at SETI Alpha 5 and they beam down on Chekhov and whatever the other guy was.
Captain Terrell.
Yeah, and he's Paul like, you, Winfield. I remember you. I never forget a face. Well, Chekhov was not in that episode. And I was recently listening to the commentary and Nicholas Meyer's like, I know he's not in that, but I'm like, just it worked for the show. You know, he's just like, whatever, it happened. And I remember watching that thinking, okay, a fan wouldn't have let that slide. A fan would have been like, but Chekhov wasn't on until the second year. But no, he wouldn't know Chekhov because you see him pretty much throughout the entire episode. He never runs into Chekhov, and how could Chekhov be in it? A fan wouldn't let that go. But I think somebody who's divorced himself or removed from it but has respect for it.
Yeah, which he obviously does.
Yeah. So I hope that answers your question. I don't think you need to be a fan. I don't even think you shouldn't be a diehard fan. And I don't know whether Joss Whedon was a diehard fan or he just loves comic books. And I think it gave him an understanding of how comic books work.
Yeah, obviously Joss Whedon was a diehard fan of Waterworld because he did the rewrite on that. And we see how that turned out.
Exactly. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Nicholas Harum sitting in for Chris and Dreyer Kramer. Now it's time for one more segment that we're going to do real quick. It's the world famous
DVD roundup.
That's right.
It's been
real
a while.
Quick, we only have about 3 minutes. I'm just going to rattle off a couple of them, and then we're going to talk because there's a set here that we're going to probably talk about for a little bit. One of them is Silver Linings Playbook. You may have heard of that movie. Won an Oscar.
Yeah, it was somewhat popular last year, I remember.
Jennifer Lawrence. I wasn't a big fan of it, but it's there. The Guilt Trip actually is a better movie than you'd expect.
That's yeah, you know, it's not the most original story, but it works.
I like the fact that it's something you can watch with your mom.
And sometimes you don't want to.
Yeah. There's also Manborg, which is a great sci-fi movie. It's terrible, but it's still great in a terrible way.
Mm-hmm.
The stinger of the week is actually Broken City. I was not a big fan of that. It's Mark Wahlberg and Russell Crowe.
And speaking of like one of our R-rated, oh, God, just awful, you know.
R-rated goodness.
Yeah. Being PG-13 would not have helped Broken City.
No.
Being not made would have helped Broken City.
There you go. The other ones we really want to talk about is there's a whole bunch of Star Trek properties hitting Blu-ray for the first time. We've only got like a minute and a half, but you've got all the movies, but more importantly, you've got season 3.
Yep, season 3 of TNG, which is, you know, probably, it's my favorite show of all time.
Yeah.
And probably season 3, you know, and season 4, which will come out probably later this year, are probably my two favorite seasons of TV ever.
Yeah. And they're good episodes. What's neat about it is all the episodes are available on DVD, and they're available on Netflix and Amazon, but they're standard definition. They've gone back and remastered this stuff. I was floored when I saw these because the color looks fantastic. You watch these old episodes, and it's very washed out. It's sort of this dim palette.
Yeah, and like the red command uniforms always look maroon in like standard def, and they are actually a real rich red, which you know, you really never picked up on until you see him remastered. You know, it's just they're draw, if I could spit it out, jaw-dropping. But yeah, just remastered all the way down to the original elements and just looked great.
And they added some new special effects that looked fantastic as well. And it doesn't look out of place. It looks appropriate for the time. And then the other one is Star Trek Best of Both Worlds, which is the cliffhanger from season 3 to 4. The reason that's worth getting is because it ends as a cliffhanger in season 3. And if you want to kind of get the completion, you don't have to wait until season 4.
Yeah, I sort of say if you're a Star Trek fan on a budget, yeah, that's a good way to go. Yeah.
We got to get going here. Iron Man 3 is coming out this week. We both gave it a rocks. Next week, we're going to talk about The Great Gatsby. Tyler Perry presents Peoples. That looks like a winner right there. And that's about it. We may have Nick back. We might have Kristen back. Who knows? We'll talk to you guys next week.
See ya.